Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Budiwa Kabaza, and for today, we are catching up with the CEO of Africa's largest mobile operator, that is MTN. We've got Ralph and Peter, who is joining us. We are at their headquarters in Johannesburg in Fairland, and we've just come out of a very interesting session. So, Ralph, greetings to you today.
Thanks very much, and pleasure to be on your platform.
Okay, so where I want to start this discussion is maybe we've just come out of an editor session just now, and you spoke quite a bit about China, and you mentioned you guys have just come out of China, and even just before we were recording, you're talking about how when you go to China, it's like seeing the future. What are your impressions? What are you seeing there? What's sparking your interest as the head of MTN when you go to a place like China and you're seeing what the landscape looks like?
Yeah, look, we travel many markets just to see where technology has got to and where technology is going. For our connectivity business as well as our fintech business. As we were discussing earlier, just been to China and quite interesting developments we're seeing there. I think the first thing, to take out is just the innovation that is in China at the moment. And one can ask the question, has some of it been spurred by kind of the export controls coming out of the U.S.? So there's a kind of a high self-reliance that you see in China. I've been going to China for almost, close probably on to 20 years now. You're seeing a high level of self-reliance. The latest, chipsets are not available, but you can see they're putting investment into being kind of chip independent. Particularly for chips for CPUs. And I think you're seeing good progress coming down in terms of 28 nanometer, 14, there's discussion on 7, and who knows, do they get to 3 and so forth. So you can see that commitment to self-reliance and what comes out of that. And, for our business, we use base stations. We want to ensure that the base stations that we procure from China, and China does, the bulk of radios, which are in our base stations, 60 to 70% comes out of there. So we want to ensure that they are meeting the export controls, but they also can supply us without interruption. We're seeing technologies there around space and power. So the components are using less power and they're getting smaller. And, that's obviously quite important for our telco agreements because, we're moving a lot more to space and power there. But also on the handsets, the handset market at the middle to lower end is dominated on this continent by Tecno.
Yeah.
And Tecno, are also building their own ecosystem of apps, on the phone. Are there opportunities to partner, et cetera? So, looking at power batteries, battery storage, and then payment systems, how are payment systems evolving? What direction is Alipay going? When you look at, broader and messaging based platforms like WeChat, what inspiration do you get there? So, to our earlier conversation, I think, the Chinese look highly committed towards, kind of leading in the digital economy. I mean, from our point of view.
Mm. Now, when it comes to a country like China, there's a lot of, developments a telco such as MTN can be taking inspiration from, and especially when you consider the fact that, to really compete, your 50 plus African countries really have to come together. Mm. And you guys, have a piece of that, have a piece of that action. I think close on 290 million subscribers now. You've just come out of, announcing your interim results. we're not going to ask you about, you know, the numbers, because we've already spoken to Tsulu, who's given us, you know, quite a comprehensive understanding of what's going on. But perhaps we can get you to mark your own homework. This is something that I'm sure many investors will be asking over the coming months, especially those that have been following MTN. Ambition 25 has been the biggest thing that you've been pushing. Yeah. I think even at the time when I started covering MTN, you know, you and Rob had, you know, formulated this, and you're like, this is what where we're going. When is this coming to an end? You know, just so that people are clear about when the, you know, when to judge it, you know, up to. Mm-hmm. And, have you come to grips with what's next? I mean, maybe it's an ambition 2030 or something like that.
No, it's a great question, because we are in that period of, you know, kind of assessing, you know, where we've been. You know, ambition 2025 was kind of directionally a 5-year strategy. You know, I mean, we use the 5-year signposts, you know, to create a sense of urgency and a focus and delivery. I mean, strategies are always evolving because the world doesn't stand still.
Yeah.
So if we start back and look at the macro backdrop when we, you know, launched Ambition 2025, that was in 2020, when we kind of kicked it off with the board, got the board to sign off and support as the executive team, and started executing and communicated it in March 2021. The investment case that underpinned that strategy had a couple of legs to it. The first was that, you know, our continent has very attractive demographics, for the age of the internet and for financial inclusion. And what do we mean by that? Many, many Africans were not, getting the benefits of the internet, i.e. they were not using data regularly. And many Africans were not being provided with financial services, the financial services we believe they deserved. And so the investment case was, we need to take the opportunity now to invest in developing the leading set of platforms, particularly around data and fintech.
Yeah.
Yes, there are other, you know, key components of telecommunications and infrastructure, but the big drivers we saw were really around data and fintech. Mm. And we said the investment case is a growth investment case.
Yeah.
And the way you'll see it is about growing subscribers, users, usage grows up. And we need to be able to demonstrate to investors that over time, our service revenue is growing faster than inflation.
Yeah.
Our expenses are growing lower than inflation, so you have operating leverage. CapEx is pretty stable, so you drive, you know, a decent free cash flow generation, mindful of the risk premium of operating the markets that we have. So that was the kind of the financial formula that underpinned. So as we kind of mark our homework now, and as we said, directionally, we said, this is what we're going to try and achieve until 2025. What are some of the aspects that we can say we've made significant progress? The first is, you know, data and fintech continue to grow very strongly.
Yes.
You know, service revenue in this period, data 21%, fintech 27%. So that investment case that we're going to be able to capture the underlying growth in the markets, I think we're moving. The one area where we haven't moved probably as fast as we wanted to on the fintech side would have been Nigeria.
Yeah.
Nigeria's taken a bit longer than we'd want. So we would mark ourselves and say, yes, fintech has grown, but, you know, Nigeria is probably a little bit is behind by a year, maybe even 2 years in terms of the usage growth. But the overall fintech business is actually, you know, growing, you know, quite nicely. And on the data side, you know, you're seeing data scaling, you know, pretty much across our markets in aggregate. When you go and look at the balance sheet was resilient, but wanted more resilience in it, i.e. reduce the dollar debt, and actually have a lot more local currency debt to match your earnings, which are largely Naira and Rand. That we've done a lot. And so in many respects, we're probably a little bit ahead of our de-gearing ambitions. And, you know, we've had some challenges with upstreaming cash out of Nigeria.
Yeah.
We would have even de-levered even further. You know, one could have argued that by now, if the upstreaming in Nigeria was possible, you know, the holdco leverage, we might have been in a net cash position, not a net debt position. So that's been a function of upstreaming and upstreaming risks that we've faced in Nigeria and possibly other markets. But the balance sheet is strong. We spoke about simplifying the portfolio. We've exited consolidated Middle East markets. We're out of Syria. We're out of Afghanistan. We're out of Yemen. We have an investment still in Iran. But the Middle East operating exposure where we ourselves are operating, I think we have ticked that. And we said we'll commit ourselves to simplify the portfolio for markets where we are not with the best owners of the assets. So, you know, we've spoken about Bissau now. So that part about simplifying the is progressing well. We spoke about local asset realization program. We're going to generate 25 billion. We've done now 22 billion of asset realizations. So we've got 3 billion to go. And, you know, we think we'll get there, as we go forward. I think the area we haven't moved as fast as I would have liked was really around fiber. I think we still meet our KPI. We said, you know, we'll build a fiber business of at least 135,000 kilometers. We're about 125 now, with a year and a half still to go. So we're making good progress. So, underlying, I think the strategy has been, you know, largely executed. The thing we've met has been currency headwinds in the near term, particularly this last 18 months. In Ghana initially, but Ghana grew themselves out of the currency headwinds. That's why you see the excellent results Ghana posts. And, you know, the Nigeria, we need to see a tariff increase, our ability to price up, either a tariff increase. And I think that can restore the kind of economic engine of Nigeria. So I think we kind of, in the aggregate, facing some tough headwinds, made good progress on our strategy. Now, to your point, you know, what happens post? I mean, these strategies that have a year naming to them, it's important to have a sense of urgency in the company. Yeah. So that's why you put time to it. But, you know, time evolves. And so, you know, as we start thinking right now, we're thinking, you know, what is beyond 2025? Yeah. But I think what you'll see is that, you know, as we get there, we are having a seamless movement into the next phase. I think we still think we're executing the right strategy. The board feels we're still executing. Some areas we just got to do things a bit faster. But is the strategy right? The board backs the strategy.
All right. Now, being cognizant of your time, for people that don't know, Ralph is an incredibly busy person.
Not too busy for you.
We want to maybe touch on two things before we let you go. The first one is an extension of the infrastructure discussion that you brought up just now around fiber and all of that. We see these cycles when it comes to telecoms infrastructure. Once upon a time, owning your own towers was, where your bread and butter was. But MTN has reached a stage where you've almost let go of practically all towers and you have service agreements with ATC, IHS, all of these guys. Right now, there's fiber. People are talking about satellite, etc. Where in the life cycle, do you sort of see these different technologies, because you guys have to make capital allocation decisions based on that? And what part do you see AI playing there, right? Because you can either get into the infrastructure, discussion, data centers, etc., or do you sort of set up your network in such a way that it can cope with the amounts of data that people are going to be generating by using AI, either as enterprises or as consumers?
No, look, I mean, you raise a good point about, what is the role of infrastructure? Does it give you competitive? I mean, when we started building MTN 30 years ago, towers was an enormous competitive advantage. And then you get to a point of almost saturation. You get a point of tower sharing or companies that believe that they can increase tenancy. Because when you are competing with party A and you're party B, you don't want another person on your towers because you're giving them a leg up, But the independent tower companies came and, drove, quite a bit of efficiency in the system. I think the same will ultimately happen in fiber. where not everybody can trench or have, you know, fiber deployed across everywhere. And, you know, that kind of wholesale open access network model becomes more the norm. And you may have a stake in it, or you might not have a stake. So I think fiber will evolve there as well.
Yeah.
And the issue with fiber is it requires an enormous amount of investment. And the payback, particularly in a more nascent market, might take very long. Okay. So you need kind of partnership capital. So that's why this thing of the approach we're taking in fiber, as we're showing now with Africa 50 on our east-to-west link, is you've got to work with a partnership capital model. I think when you look at non-terrestrial networks, it's the same thing. You know, these satellites that are going up into low Earth orbit, and maybe take Starlink out of the equation, but the bulk of them, I mean, these are consortias.
Yeah.
So the question is, what problem are you trying to solve? The problem you're trying to solve is the customer and the business must always be connected. And the way you're going to get ubiquitous connectivity is leveraging undersea cables, terrestrial infrastructure, fixed and wireless, and non-terrestrial networks like LEO. The future business model will be who best aggregates these assets to ensure that Mudiwa and Ralph are always on. It doesn't matter where. When you're in an airplane, when you're on a ship, you're in a remote area, you're always on and you have the kind of connectivity. So these things must not be seen as competing, because you've got to start with the problem you're solving. The solution is ubiquity and latency. I must always be connected if I choose to be, and I must always have, you know, decent to good latency. I must have good speeds and at an affordable price. So I think one mustn't see these as necessary competing, but these are complementary technologies of the future, solving the I'm always connected, and wherever I am, on a mountain ridge, in the sea, on an aeroplane. That's kind of the end state. And I think that's where, you know, if we move from 5G to 6G, I mean, 6G is trying to solve that question ultimately, is the always connected consumer or the business.
And the AI piece and how that would drive?
Yeah, look, the AI piece in my mind, I mean, AI has been around for a long time. I think today we are getting excited about generative AI, AI that generates new content. Predictive AI has been around for a long time, saying, you know, Mudiwa, I know your habits. I'm going to predict what your next best offer will be. And we use that in CVM in our business. So I think what we're talking about now is this generative AI. But there is beyond that, if you speak to the pundits and those who know, the next move, which is, you know, the big deal, according to people in the space, is general artificial intelligence. Yeah. And when you get to general artificial intelligence, you know, you're basically machine and man are coming together.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when that's going to happen. But let's stay in the realm of where we are today. So predictive AI, those use cases are already here. Generative AI, you know, it's going to be a tool that enhances productivity in a telco more largely. I think the ability to, I mean, and that's the generative AI that's coming out of these large language modules, models. That specific form of generative AI, I think you're going to find that there's very limited case for the MNO and operators such as ours to sell a product to. I mean, if you're reselling Microsoft to a third party and Copilot is built in there, that's what you can do when you get to the customer. But I think it's going to make operations a lot more efficient.
Does it become a game changer for a telco, though, from a traffic point of view, the same way that social media did?
It potentially can, in just managing you know, the network more efficiently. Can the network sleep at a particular point in time? Why does the network have to be on all the time? If I know, Mudiwa, that in your neighborhood, generally between 2 o'clock and 4:30 in the morning, there's almost no traffic. You know, but if you decide to call, then it will come on. is, you know, you're going to have a much more efficient network, reducing costs. So that's why I say you can see the efficiency that AI will ultimately bring. Look, there's talk about small language models that are operating on our phones here and how those, you know, can work. I think the use case of generative AI and those models right now, it's, I think you see high impact in banking. You see high impact in pharmaceuticals. I mean, those are the sectors that are seen, you know, to have the highest impact at this stage of generative AI development. I mean, this thing will evolve. I think the end state of where it is now, we haven't seen. So, I mean, we're excited about it. We're seeing it as a booster to productivity and efficiency. I don't think there is yet a proven business case on operators selling this as a unique service that an operator. The hyperscalers are investing enormously. And, you know, they are training and they're building, you know, these data centers, these farms that are consuming an enormous amount of electricity and water. And if you want to compete in that space, you have to compete with them.
Yeah.
They're spending hundreds of billions of dollars per annum on the capex there.
All right. So that's where we end off. It has been great just chatting to Ralph, just giving us some insight into what's going on in the world of MTN. A couple of call-outs that, you know, we spoke about, you know, what's the portfolio looking like, strategy, marking homework, so to say, about Ambition 2025, and him just giving us a view of how they have performed, you know, according to the targets that they set in 2020, starting in 2021, and how they'll be looking at, you know, the period beyond that. Also talking to us about what's going on in the world of AI and, you know, how a telecoms company such as MTN can be thinking, you know, around how to position themselves. He mentions the fact that the type of money that goes into these types of models, especially from a generative AI point of view, might not be the best route for, you know, a telco to go. But, you know, in the same way that he speaks about partnership on the infrastructure side, he's sort of saying that telcos have to look differently, you know, when it comes to the AI debate. You know, small language models are one of the other areas that, you know, he's keen and interested in. But he does say that the business case, a true business case for a telco in Gen AI, you know, is yet to be found, but hopeful and excited about what the future looks like. Ralph, thank you so much.
Much appreciated. It's a pleasure.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.